This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. It's time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your hosts, Drew Tignanelli and Tim Maurer.
And this is Drew Tignanelli here with Money, Riches, and Wealth, December 22nd, 2010.
It surely is.
Two shows left, Tim, of this year, 2010. But tonight's a big one, and I'll just say one quick thing, and that
is that...
You know, our guest tonight is one of the five absolute must-read magazines. He's the president and chief executive officer of a must-read magazine in the financial industry. If you're a serious investor, absolutely, no doubt about it.
You have to be plugged in.
You have to be reading it. It's absolute. There's no doubt about it. I've read it for at least 25 years now.
Do you mind if I introduce tonight's
speaker? Yeah, go
ahead. With all the, you know... Bill, you've given it. Steve Forbes is president and chief executive officer of Forbes and editor-in-chief of Forbes Media. Since Mr. Forbes assumed his position in 1990, the company has launched a variety of new publications and businesses. They include Forbes FYI, the irreverent lifestyle supplement, Forbes Global, the magazine's international publication, and Chinese, Korean, Japanese, Brazilian, Russian, Arabic, and Hebrew editions of the magazine. Forbes also publishes the Gilder Technology Report, as well as a number of investment newsletters. In 1997, Forbes entered the new media arena with the launch of Forbes.com. The site now attracts over 7 million unique visitors a month and has become the leading destination site for business decision makers and investors. Mr. Forbes, thank you for being with us tonight.
Well, it's great to be with you. Thank you.
Steve, we really appreciate you giving your time to be with us, and we got a lot of very important issues on the table as we close out the year 2010. In your opinion, what would be the number one thing that investors or just Americans should be concerned about right now?
Well, what they should be concerned about are several things. One is the cheap dollar. Two is this administration's going to try to do through regulations what it couldn't do in Congress, and you got an example of that yesterday when the Federal Communications Commission decided against a court opinion and Congress to decide to regulate the internet. And then on the regulatory front too, the abominations coming from Obamacare.
Yeah. That health care bill, in my opinion, is a disaster. You know, but I don't even think the Democrats like the bill. Now, I think politicians look at politics as kind of like a football game, you know. It's getting closer to the real goal line. That health care bill was one step closer to getting full national health care through. What do you think?
Yes, and what the White House has done, what this president has done, is to pass a bill where they have de facto nationalized the health care industry. That, for example, they put out regulations that companies that raise their prices more than 10% are going to go through the process, regulatory process, to have to explain how they justify it. They're being told what to put in their policies, told what to charge for their policies. And this is perfect for these, what you might call soft core socialists. That is, you don't have to take over an industry. Just de facto nationalize it, let the private companies, once private companies, get the criticism, and the government sits back and reaps the power.
What did you think of the passing of the Tax Act with all the extra stuff that got into it?
Well, this Congress, which thankfully will expire in January, is addicted to that kind of stuff. But I think we avoided a train wreck by not having a massive tax increase on January 1st. At least we got the death tax from 55% down to 35% for 24 months, and I think we can work to eliminate it or at least sharply lower it. And so you take what you can. And also they did not renew those Build America bonds, which were a euphemism for subsidies for governments to, on the local level, to borrow. We do not need more government borrowing.
Well, you know, there's a lot of concern about the municipalities, you know, that they're in trouble, which they are, in my opinion. I wouldn't own a municipal bond right this minute if they gave me the money to buy it. What do you think is going on in the States? Do you think it's a train wreck like Meredith Whitney talked about on 60 Minutes?
Well, I think what's going to happen is that states are going to have to do what New Jersey Governor Chris Christie has done. And that is confront these issues. Even though he's a Republican, he went before Democrat legislature and got through a budget where the spending levels are actually lower than they were 4 years ago.
Wow.
We've got a cap on property taxes, got the top income tax rate reduced 18%, and now he's tackling the unions, particularly the teachers' union, on bloated pensions. And so I think he's going to be the template for a lot of governors who take office in the next 2 or 3 weeks on how they're going to have to approach their problems. As you know, if you take the word Greece and translate it into American, you come up with words like Illinois, California, New York, and some others.
Right.
Steve, you know, one of the difficulties that I think investors have these days, even as we analyze the market and advise our clients and folks on this show and other forms of media, one of the difficulties is being able to separate our opinion of what should be happening, maybe especially on the U.S. government front, and at the same time attempt to anticipate what may happen. So the X factor, for example, in the last 3 years has been obviously the government stepping in a very big way in terms of saving money market accounts and bailouts and so forth. That must be an especially difficult dynamic for you at your level.
Well, it's one thing to deal with an emergency. The government helped create the panic, so it should have helped put out the fire that it helped set. But like a natural disaster, you don't, you know, when you throw in food and medicine and tents and things like that, it doesn't justify staying in forever. And unfortunately, this president's used the crisis to enormously increase the powers of the government. I loved it a couple of weeks ago. He, in effect, said the reason he semi-nationalized health care was in response to the economic crisis. Boy, he was Pinocchio. He would need a forklift to lift his nose by now.
If you were president in 2008, as everything started to unfold, what would you have done? Would you let those institutions go under?
No, what you'd have tried to have done was what J.P. Morgan did 100 years ago when they had a panic, and that is you sit down and determine who is worth saving and who isn't. In other words, try to make a distinction between the guilty and the not-so-guilty. But more important, what they should have done, and this gets to be very, very boring, but obviously critical, is I would have suspended mark-to-market accounting. I'd have done it before, which was good. The way it was being applied was that it was destroying unnecessarily bank capital. When Congress finally forced a change on that in early 2009, the stock market turned upward from its lows, and the credit market started to come back to life. Another thing I would have done is stop trashing the U.S. dollar. Weak dollar means weak recovery. You know, if the Fed hadn't printed so much money in the early part of the last decade, you never would have had the wherewithal for this housing bubble.
So you're not a big fan of Mr. Greenspan's handling of the Federal Reserve?
A polite word would be, no, I'm not a fan. Polite response.
Uh-huh. Steve, can you hold on with us for the last segment of our show? Because I got to take a break for traffic, and we'll be right back with the last part of Money, Riches, and Wealth with Steve Forbes.
Hi, this is Tim Maurer, co-host of Money, Riches, and Wealth, and whether you're listening to this show for the first or 200th time, you may wonder how in the world the show's host, Drew Tignanelli, knows so much about such a broad spectrum of financial topics. Drew doesn't see personal financial education as merely his job, but also his mission and calling. So while you and I are watching our favorite television show, Drew is reading financial periodicals and journals. You see, hosting this show and running our financial advisory firm, the Financial Consulate, is, of course, Drew's vocation, but it's also his outside interest, his hobby, and his passion. But regardless of his level of knowledge, Drew knows that he alone can't accomplish his mission. It's bigger than him. So he has surrounded himself with a team of educated, credentialed, and experienced professionals to ensure that the Financial Consulate delivers a service to our clients and to you that is both deep and wide. Don't wait until the next financial disaster to start working with a team of advisors customized to provide you with the level of service you should expect. Take that first step by calling us for a complimentary intro appointment at 410-823-7283. That's 410-823-SAFE.
Angels sing, a new king born today.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
See, I made it clear to Noah last week that Christmas carols, not just, you know, hokey Christmas songs.
I gotcha.
You know? There you go.
Well, he's obviously been working behind the scenes, Drew.
He's been doing a great job, you know.
Great producer.
We're here
that he is.
With Steve Forbes. Steve.
That is the Steve Forbes.
Yes, yeah, not his twin, but
right.
The Steve Forbes.
Yeah.
And, Steve, at the beginning of the show, I said that Forbes magazine is an absolute must-read. It's one of the five, you know, you got to be reading it, magazines. I guess a good question for you, would you agree with that?
Oh, I'll be objective and say I think you're onto something there, yes. you're obviously a very smart man.
Thank you, sir.
Teeing up the compliment,
and
very
I
nice,
do,
Drew.
I do absolutely mean that.
Thank you.
There
yeah.
is no doubt that Forbes gives you more information in a quick shot than you can get pretty much in any other. You get to read about people that are running these companies, and, you know, that's one of Warren Buffett's key ingredients to when he buys a company is
right.
he wants to know who the person is that's
what's
running the company.
Sure.
What's the
right.
character of that person? And that's sure. what you guys do a great job of.
Well, thank you. My grandfather, who founded our company 93 years ago, he was an immigrant, penniless immigrant to this country from Scotland, liked to say that you'll learn more about the prospects of a company looking at the head knocker. That's what he called CEOs. than you will at the balance sheet. And that's been our credo ever since.
Now, that brings us to another topic, which is you guys do a lot of the top 400, the top 1,000, you know, the richest people and so forth. You know, why? What do you see as the, I mean, I know what I see, but what do you see as the reason that you do all those different lists?
Well, people like to see rankings. And with the Forbes 400 list and our plus our global billionaires, people see who's rising up in the world. Most of them are entrepreneurs. What areas are terms are becoming profitable, having great growth, and it's really a snapshot. And what it also underscores is capital is not piles of gold or jewelry or physical things. It is really people's perceptions, the mind. You know, you take for example the symbol of the age, the microchip. Based on sand, silicon, no shortage of sand. Whoever thought when you went to the beach that that stuff you're walking on and making castles out of would create companies worth hundreds of billions of dollars.
Hmm. Well, you know, Steve, too, I think that a lot of people might think, well, Forbes, maybe they're not the entrepreneurially minded, the business minded, but one of the more interesting things I saw in researching for this interview was some videos online in conjunction with the Forbes 400, you sitting with Warren Buffett on your left hand and Jay-Z on your right hand. What gave you the impulse to bring minds like that together? It was really fascinating stuff.
Well, you wouldn't think of such a pairing, but in a way they're both guys who did things outside the box. Buffett is 80, Jay-Z is 40, and in their respective industries, that's pretty old. 80 in investing, 40 in entertainment.
Sure.
That's getting on. And each did things in their own way. Each are very, very entrepreneurial. So we thought, why not? And we went out to Omaha, where Buffett has his headquarters. We met first for a lunch at the diner that Buffett goes to each day. And so when Buffett came into the diner, no heads turned because they're accustomed to seeing him. Jay-Z comes in and every head turned.
Right.
How so, about when you came in?
They're looking for stock tips. But it was very appropriate, too. There was a plastic statue of Elvis in the diner. And just recently, Jay-Z surpassed Elvis for best-selling albums.
Wow.
Really? I didn't know that.
He's got more now than Elvis.
Wow.
The only one with more than him now is a group, not a single artist, but a group, obviously, the Beatles.
Yeah.
Wow.
And one thing I liked about Buffett, he loves McDonald's.
Is that right? The food or the stock?
His doctor says you shouldn't eat so many of those things. He goes out and eats them. when we're dining with him, he ordered a chicken steak, and you know what that is.
Right.
And just with glee, poured salt on it.
And drinks a cherry Coke to drain it down.
And a cherry milkshake.
Right.
So all the things you're not supposed to do. And each lunch, he has delivered a Big Mac.
Right.
He has
is that
every
right?
day.
Yeah.
Sometimes he decides to have a little variety, like going to Wendy's or Burger King. And one day he had a delivery from Wendy's and didn't realize that their cheeseburgers are wrapped in metallic wrapper. So he put them in the microwave and blew it up. He's done that twice now.
Well, in addition to his appetite, I thought one of the more interesting things that jumped out at me from the interview was this discussion of the moat. Would you get into that a little bit for us?
Well, what Buffett likes in a business is a business where what you might call the ease of entry is very, very difficult. That once you get in, it can be very profitable, but getting in is not easy. And so he looks for those moats. It's hard to believe today, but several decades ago, newspapers were moats.
Absolutely.
When you were in a city, very, very hard to establish a competing newspaper. So he was early on to that, bought the Buffalo News, made a big investment in the Washington Post and the like. And so he's always looking for industries where it's not easy to do it again.
So does he think there's any industries out there right now like that?
Well, one that we, as you know, a little over a year ago, he bought the Burlington Northern Railroad, one of the finest in the country. We're not laying much new track now. But with commodities booming and everything else, the freight business is going up. So he figured there's no way somebody's going to go out and buy an electric train set and compete against the B&N.
Now, one of the things that fascinates me about Buffett is that he goes around saying that we ought to raise the taxes on wealthy and we ought to all pay estate taxes, et cetera, but I've watched him for years, and he's one of the masters of tax planning. He's minimized his taxes better than anyone over the last 50 years of his career. What's going on?
Why
there?
The disconnect, Drew?
Yeah, that's a good way to
put it. Everyone has disconnects, and... as you know, in terms of the death tax, let's call it the death tax. That's what it is.
That's true.
That's bad enough for getting taxed when you're alive, but quite another when you have to pay tax when you're out of this world.
Right.
And the ones who get really hit by that are not the super rich. They can plan around that, set up foundations and the like. It's people, you know, 5 million, 50 million, people who've set up businesses, major farms with a lot of land.
Mm-hmm.
They're the ones that get smacked with it because they don't have a lot of time
right.
to hire sophisticated counseling beyond basics like buying life insurance to figure out how you get around these things. So it's a huge waste of what you might call brain capital.
Right.
And the money's been taxed already during your lifetime, so leave it alone for once.
Yeah, you know, actually, I work with a lot of clients that when I meet with them, they don't even realize that there's an estate tax and that they're subject to it because they don't know what their farm's worth. They don't know what their business is worth. And
they don't know that their life insurance will actually become part
right,
of their gross estate.
You know, and sure. All that kind of stuff. And so you have to educate them on that. And they're shocked that they could pay millions of dollars even though they're only worth $6, $7, $8 million.
Well, they don't think of themselves as rich. They think of themselves as builders, people who work to build up a business. But doesn't mean they're sitting on a pile of cash.
Yeah.
And yet the government comes in and smacks them. Now the proponents of the death tax will say, well, they have 14 years in which to pay it off, blah, blah, blah. But it's still a death tax, whether
right.
you pay it up front or pay it over the installment plan.
Now, Stephen, reading your magazine for years, you, if I understand correctly, you've always been a big proponent of wanting to go back to the gold standard. Is that true?
I'm a proponent of going forward with the gold standard, tying the dollar back to gold.
Right.
Because I don't trust politicians. And when they get a hold of the money, you know what happens. And so why not go with something that holds its value? And minimize the mischief that these guys can do.
Now, what value would they have to put on gold today in order to go back to the gold standard or go forward
to the gold
standard?
Yeah,
I got to remember that. Go forward to a gold standard. What price would they have to put on gold to be able to do that today?
Not too high. It's about what $1,300-$1,400 now, fluctuating
right?
there. Probably $200 or $300 of that is anticipation of the Fed to doing bad things, which they always end up doing. And so let's just pick a number for argument's sake. Let's pick $1,000. You'd pick $1,000. You don't have to own the gold, the government. All it does is look at the price, and if you want to be sophisticated, take a 90-day moving average.
Mm-hmm.
And if it goes much above 1,000, everyone knows you'll tighten up. If it goes much below 1,000 for a time, everyone knows you're going to ease.
So let
gold be your guide. And you don't have to own the stuff. Just let the markets tell you what to do.
Now, if we did that, you probably would see a lot of sovereign debt defaults in a short period of time, because that wouldn't take away the ability to print money to fund your deficits.
Well, what it would do is stop countries from getting in a mess in the first place.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Because people aren't going to buy your bonds unless it's tied to a gold dollar or maybe even a gold euro or whatever. And if you're not going to willing to make adhere to that kind of discipline, guess what's going to happen to you? You're going to pay a very high rate of interest.
Right.
You know, like your credit card. So the markets will discipline you. You won't be allowed to do that because people once again take a look at fundamentals.
Let's finish this, you know, because we're only going to interview for this half hour. But if you answer just this one last question, and we'll let you go, sir. And that is the sovereign debt crisis in Europe and potentially here in the United States. We've already talked about municipalities. How do you see that unfolding, and what do you think investors ought to be focusing on thinking about?
Well, in terms of munis, you're going to actually have to do credit analysis, which is sort of an alien concept to munis because tax-free, what the heck?
Yeah, right.
And so if you want to own munis and don't have the time to do credit analysis, then buy a bunch of them or buy a fund so you spread the risk. And as you know, states and municipalities and counties can go bankrupt, as Orange County did for its own reasons a number of years ago. But states, there's no bankruptcy law for states going under. So it's going to be a very murky area. But I think at the end of the day, most entities, including California, I'm not so sure about Illinois, but California will start to face up to it. You have Governor Moonbeam out there, and he's capable of doing anything. You know, he's in favor of the flat tax, and he could go to the unions and say, hey, the cupboard's dry. We've got to make changes.
Hmm. What about Europe? Is the euro going to go under?
No, and this is where they've mucked this thing up. If the European Central Bank takes on the characteristics of the Bundesbank, the old Bundesbank when Germany had a Deutschmark, or what the Swiss try to do today, and that is a sound currency,
mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter if a particular borrower defaults or has to restructure its debt. If people know the currency's good, they don't want to own the paper of Greece, but they'll still hold the euro. Just as if the dollar was sound in this country and Illinois goes belly up, too bad for Illinois bondholders, but it doesn't mean the dollar has to go down.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Well, Steve, we really appreciate you being with us. We ask the Lord to bless you and to have a Merry Christmas, you and your family, and best to you and your magazine, sir. Are you going to run this year? Next year?
No, I'm an agitator now.
And quite effective as well, I might add.
Thank you.
All right.
You guys keep at it, too.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks, sir.
You take care. We're going to take our last break.
Happy New Year.
Thank you, sir. Take care, Mr. Ford. And we're going to take a break. Terry Trey in traffic. Big back, money, riches, and wealth.
Deck the hall with boughs of holly. La 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 la. Tis the season to be jolly, fa la 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 la. Don we now our gay apparel, fa la 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 la. Throw the ancient Yuletide carol, fa la 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 la.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
We'll see if Noah, coming back from the next break, can figure out what our best favorite Christmas carols are.
I look forward to
the challenge.
Hearing Noah put to the test.
Right.
Drew, that was a fascinating discussion that we just had.
It was a good discussion, very good, and I hope our listeners enjoyed it. And I am very serious now that Mr. Forbes is not on the line with us. It is one of the five absolute, got to read it every
right.
month, or actually it comes out, I believe, every 2 weeks. You got to read it.
So we weren't blowing smoke.
It was not in any way, shape, or form. It is an absolute. Forbes is an absolute. You got to read it. It's just, it gives you so much information in such a quick period of time, and it gives you a look into the people that are running the companies, and no magazine does that as well as Forbes does with a lot of other information.
Sure.
A lot of other investors who are talking about what they're thinking about. And it's always great to understand what others are thinking about, not because I want to take their idea and try to implement it for myself. That's a losing philosophy.
Right.
But I want to know what they're doing. I want to know what they're thinking about so that it will impact
it educates
what I
your
should
philosophy.
Be thinking
sure.
about.
Yeah, it gives you the context you need.
Usually I'm thinking about it from a contrarian point of view.
Right.
In other words, if they're bullish, I'm wondering, you
You're
know,
inclined
am I,
to be bearish.
Am I on the wrong side of the table if I'm bullish with
right,
them, you know?
Right.
But there's lots of other reasons that I read Forbes every time it comes out, and it was a true honor to be able to talk with Steve and hear the insights of what he has to say. Because his commentary at the beginning of the magazine is amazing. The different topics he touches each and every week or 2 weeks.
Absolutely.
So we're on an open show tonight now.
For the remainder of the show?
Yep.
I'm sure we stirred a lot of questions with that.
So anybody wants to take the follow-up seat as guest to the Money, Riches, and Wealth show from...
Yeah.
The next person on is the person that gets to follow Steve Forbes.
There you go.
And they can call in now, 410-922-6680, #9226, and ask whatever question they would like, and they become the guest now for the next half hour.
So it sounded like you might take exception with a couple of the things that he said. He doesn't seem to think that munis are quite as scary as I get the sense you do. He doesn't seem to think that the sovereign debt crisis could explode to the degree of making the euro go away. What do you think? Do you think that it's a different slant?
The euro probably will not go away, but you will probably see many countries peel away from the euro.
Right.
I think Greece will peel away. I think Slovakia will peel away. I think Portugal will peel away. And whether Italy and Spain do, and Ireland, I don't think Ireland would ever do it, but I think... Spain and Italy, I think they'll do everything to not, but, you know, who knows?
And what about Germany? Are they too invested now with all the capital they've put in to help keep the euro strong?
That would be the biggest disaster of them all if Germany just said, I've had it with you guys, you're all a bunch of slackers, and I'm out of here. You know,
the most responsible.
That would destroy Germany, because Germany does a lot of business with them.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, it was in everyone's interest to do the euro, because Germany was competing against these other countries that had cheaper currencies to them. And these guys were working out of countries that had higher inflation. And so it was a win-win. They come together, they say, let's eliminate your inflation and let's eliminate your advantage against me in trading, and we both win. And that's exactly what happened until they realized that the other guys were really smoke and mirror in their balance sheets.
Sure.
And asking Goldman Sachs to help them figure out how to make the illusion look real.
Yeah. So, unbelievable stuff.
So Europe has some big, big, big issues and concerns. And, I think he's right that for the most part, states are unlikely to go under. Because, take for Illinois, for example, which is probably the worst. In the Illinois Constitution, it says that they must pay the bondholders and the interest on the bondholders to the bondholders first before any single individual in the state gets paid.
Wow.
Same in California.
Is that right?
And so think about that. They could collect taxes and the bondholders get it
They'd
before.
Be cutting the state payroll before they will be...
They will be firing the governor
before
the bondholders will not get paid.
Or at least taking his salary.
But can they change the state constitution? That's the scary question.
Right.
He talked about, he called him Moonbeam. I don't know why he would use such a disrespectful name to the governor of California.
No.
I guess maybe the governor thinks
no.
it's a good name.
I thought he might have been talking about the incoming
That's
governor,
what he's talking
Jerry
about.
Jerry Brown?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's talking about the incoming. That's who I'm referring to also.
Well, because he's a little bit of a nutcase.
Oh, yeah. That's always been his name.
He's
his
a
nickname.
Partier, right?
His nickname has been Moonbeam, and I can't remember the story as to why. But he talked about him from a positive point of view, that he would go and actually get the state in line, as opposed to maybe he would try to change the Constitution and say, look, this just isn't fair. You know, you guys are just going to have to take a haircut. That's all there is to it.
Right.
That's what Ireland is doing right now.
Yeah,
Ireland is actually passing constitutional amendments and or legislation that says we are not going to fulfill the agreement that we had made before. And so this is the way it's going to be, and you're just going to live with it.
Yeah, interesting.
And so California could do the same.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know. I just think that the next 2 years is going to be fascinating.
Yeah, it really is. Well, and especially also in the United States with the new tax law having been extended now for 2 years and some brand new things in that tax law, we just got a whole other thing to wait for. Right after 10 years of the estate tax, for example, being a ticking time bomb, now we basically got a 2-year extension on that. But it's the best deal that folks have had yet.
Yeah, it's a fascinating law. I think in the first couple months of 2011, we're going to have an estate attorney on to talk about it because, you know, there were a lot of sophisticated things you had to do mm-hmm. to get the maximization of the estate law. Now, if a husband dies and does not use any of his estate exemption, the wife can inherit it,
mm-hmm.
and it's a potential to eliminate portion of the complexity of the estate tax laws. But it still is still quite complicated. So anyway, we'll talk more about that. Obviously, nobody wanted to try to follow up Stephen Forbes.
It's a tough act to follow.
And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to take the You Need to Know break, and maybe somebody will want to follow you.
I'm sure they won't have any trouble doing that.
Anyway.
What's the number, though?
410-922-6680, #9226, if you want to call in with AT&T Mobility, and you can follow Mr. Maurer with You Need to Know. So we've got about 10 minutes left in the show. When we come back, we'd love to answer your question. 410-922-6680, Timothy, what do I need to know?
You need to know the gift that keeps taking. Let's be honest, no one ever wished for a smaller holiday gift. That quote starts a TV commercial that seems to be running in nearly every commercial block throughout the month of December. Since it's not my desire to shed a bad light on the company who developed this marketing pitch, I'll not mention them by name, but only give you a hint. It rhymes with Schmexis. They make excellent cars, and many would argue that they do so at a reasonable value as compared to other luxury car makers. The beef I have with them, and nearly every other luxury car maker, is that they ask us to actually make the purchase of one of their vehicles a Christmas present. What does that do to your gift budget? Is stacking another $37,975 to $50,000 with all the options on top of your existing holiday gift budget doable? As Cousin Eddie said in Christmas Vacation, quote, Clark, that's the gift that keeps on giving the whole year, unquote. For most, the purchase of a new car is the gift that keeps on taking the whole year, or two, or five, or six. If, for example, you get to the top-of-the-line stocking stuffer, even with attractive financing options at 1.9%, you'll be paying over $850 per month for 5 years. I'm not expecting ad agencies to provide us with an ethical foundation as consumers. It could easily be argued that it's their objective to melt away our common financial sense this holiday season. But as I find myself staring longingly at luxury SUVs beset with bows as big as a Christmas tree, I thought it might be valuable to remind myself, and anyone else who might be susceptible to indulgent moment this time of year, that a $50,000 present that requires an amortized mortgage on a depreciating asset isn't really a gift, but instead a burden. And that is something that you need to know.
Said the night wind to the little lamb, do you see what I see? Way up in the sky, little lamb, do you see what I see? A star,
now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
With a tail as big as a kite.
Oh, that's beautiful, Drew.
I can do all four stanzas of this song, believe it or not.
I do not believe that, actually.
Why am I stumble a couple times, but, you know?
You know, I don't know why we use any music, professional music, for a bump. We should just have you sing us in and out of every
See, the next one, the lamb says to the shepherd boy, do you hear what I hear? A voice high above the tree. And then the shepherd boy says to the king, do you know what I know? A child shivers in the cold. Let's bring us silver and gold. And then the king says to all the people, do you...
There's a sea in
peace,
there somewhere.
Pray for peace, every people everywhere.
Right.
And he says, you know, there's a child sleeping in the night who will bring us goodness and light.
Sounds
there
like
you
the refrain
go.
Of the first stanza, but I think there's a do you see what I see? And
that's,
I think,
that's what the little lamb says to the... No, that's what the star says to the lamb at the beginning. Do you see what I see?
Oh, of course. All I'm doing is now confusing the issue. You are obviously the expert on this particular Christmas carol. I seed
next
to
week
you,
we'll
sir.
See if we'll see if Noah can get Tim's favorite Christmas carol.
Uh-huh.
And it
we'll
goes
see.
Something like, oh, holy night.
Well, yeah, that's... there you go.
That's
well,
okay. It'll work.
Yeah.
We're going to Leo in Catonsville. Leo, how can we help you?
Hi. You asked Mr. Forbes what he would have done differently to handle the financial crisis.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any doubts that the given outcome is any different than the intended outcome for the people that that did it?
I want to...
The given outcome... Can you rephrase the question a little? We're not exactly sure your angle.
Well, the way things turned out.
Yeah.
Don't you think that that is exactly what was intended to happen?
In other words, that they were trying to figure out who they could let fail and who they couldn't let fail?
No. In other words, the way it turned out, the method that they created by what they were doing...
Right.
When they were in the process of doing it, a lot of the people were saying they were going about it the wrong way.
Oh, I see.
Right.
Don't you think that those people knew that the end was coming? Yeah, in fact, one of the books that Drew has finished reading and I'm reading right now or listening to is The Big Short, and it's really the insider's take on this whole gig, and it is absolutely fascinating. It basically confirms everything that you're saying. Is that, well, there were a large number of people on the inside, people who were the top executives as well as traders, who were just completely ignorant, period, and were only looking out for what was right in front of their face in their own best interest. But then there was a minority of people who knew exactly what was going on and were playing the firms against it for their own benefit. Fascinating stuff. The Big Short, by the way, is the name of that book. Fascinating.
Yeah, Leo, I think that, you know, one I disagreed with Forbes in that regard is that I think that a lot of those financial institutions should have gone under because they made stupid bets. They made stupid decisions. And the government stepped in and said, no, we're not going to let this happen because it's going to be too painful. But let me tell you something. That's what brought Ireland down. Ireland went down because they said, no, we're not going to let this happen because it's going to be too painful.
Right, so they overreached.
Next thing you know, Ireland went bankrupt.
Well, that's my point.
And in Europe, they're going to do the same thing. Europe keeps saying, we're not going to let Ireland go under. We're not going to let Spain go under. We're not going to let Italy go under. And there's going to come a time where they're going to bite too much that they can't chew it, and they're going to go bankrupt. And the United States is going to do the same thing.
Well, I'm wondering if you're actually attributing better motives than what they actually had. In other words, do you really think that they were trying to cure the financial crisis, or they were just trying to take advantage of it?
Well,
I think they were absolutely scared out of their wits that the world was going to come to an end if they didn't do it. And if you read Paulson's book, Henry Paulson wrote a book, On the Brink, and, you know, he literally was devastated that he was going to be Treasury Secretary when the financial system of the world totally, completely collapsed, and they were going to have to start from scratch again.
Yeah, and I think that proves Leo's point to a certain degree, though, Drew, is that self-preservation may have actually been the primary instinct. I'm not sure.
Well, George Bush said the same thing. He said, I am not going to be the Herbert Hoover
right.
of 2008.
Right.
And so he did whatever he could to try to make sure that this thing didn't blow up
sure.
into a bigger devastation.
Well, and the irony of these firms, I think, the one that really strikes me, and we had news come out the last couple of weeks, the actual number of times that Goldman Sachs went to the government for a handout
right.
For the freebie loan, it was like 80-some times. This is the same entity who would have been...
80? It was much more than 80, Tim. It
was
800 times. Well, I'm sorry, Goldman went about 100 times. Morgan Stanley went 800 times to him.
Unbelievable. Yeah, and I was thinking...
Some of them as much as $1 trillion they borrowed over time.
And these are the entities who were trying to shed regulators for years
well,
and years and years.
It's my understanding that Henry Paulson took advantage of it to even old scores. That's how come Lehman failed.
Well, that's a theory that they have, and it really hasn't been proven yet one way or the other, and Paulson doesn't truly say in his book and so forth. So, you know, it's an interesting, you know, it's a fascinating time, and,
the story's going to be playing out for decades.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Anyway, Leo, good call, good question, and keep listening to Money, Riches, and Wealth, sir. And we'll look forward to talking with you in 2011.
All right, thank you.
All right, sir. Anyway, we've got about a minute left. What's happening? Anything coming up, Tim? Next week's open show.
Next week we have an open show to close out 2010. And so gear up with your questions. Hopefully,
the best of Money, Riches, and Wealth, Noah's going to do a tape on.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah. Look at Noah. I am.
You
got to listen to
every. You need to throw it together.
You
got to
listen to every show for 2010 and put this together. All right? We're going to look forward to it, man. Anyway, what else? We have some good guests coming up.
We have some very interesting stuff coming up in the coming months.
There is a possibility that Michael Lewis, the author of The Big Short, may be with us in 2011. He's holding off on making actual appointments or appearances
right.
until the beginning of 2011. He's going to start booking them. And so hopefully we will be able to get him on. Because if you're not read The Big Short, you absolutely have to read
fascinating.
It.
And I do know one of the things coming up shortly in January, Drew, is Will Stith, bond expert locally, a manager of Bond Fund. And that's a big discussion on this show. Is there a bond bubble? What is the impact it could have on your portfolio? So that'll be one of the fun things we'll be talking about in January.
Absolutely. Well, anyway, we're at the end of the show, Money, Riches, and Wealth, the show just before the Christmas holiday season.
Mm-hmm.
And so Saturday is Christmas.
So we say Merry Christmas.
So we say Merry Christmas and God bless. This is Drew Tignanelli. Take care.